Hey everybody, welcome back to the Cave of Solitude. I am Eric Anthony, thank you for joining us this week. For this episode, I'm going to be flying solo in the cave, literally being in the Cave of Solitude. I'm just going to give you guys some really great footage coming to you from the 2016 Toronto Comic Con. I had the chance of attending on Friday and Saturday, had a great time, got to meet some really great artists, have good conversations with some really well-known creators. This episode specifically, I'm going to give you guys some of the recordings I did for the panel that was hosted by Rob Liefeld, Deadpool's daddy himself. You guys all know who he is, especially now with the extreme popularity of the character, the movie coming out and killing it at the box office. But I thought it'd be really cool and timely for us to hear a panel from Rob Liefeld. He's a much beloved and in some ways very reviled comic book creator and artist. He had huge success in the late 80s and early 90s. He talks all about that. We know that he went on to be one of the co-creators of Image Comics. And now everything's coming full circle for him with Deadpool being such an amazing success that people were highly anticipating, obviously, but I don't think anybody thought that Deadpool would be where he is now. So I know everybody is in full Batman versus Superman anticipation. Me and Daff J have been promising to bring you some of our book club Batman Superman stories that we really love, and they are coming, we promise. But I thought how great would it be to have a really awesome panel from the Comic-Con in Toronto to hear Rob Liefeld himself, and he even talked a little bit about Batman and Superman, and I was pleasantly surprised at how much fun his panel was and how quick the hour went. I'm sure you guys are gonna like it too. And even though he's Deadpool's daddy, and we know how foul-mouthed Deadpool has been presented in movies and how crass he can be within the comic books, he's definitely more centered toward teenage characters, Rob Liefeld, his panel was extremely clean. So anybody can listen to this and hear him talk a little bit about comic book history and tell some really cool stories about his family. Anytime you get to hear about that era of comic book publishing, it's extremely cool. So here it is. The footage is going to come in just a little bit late because he didn't want a moderator during his panel. He just wanted to talk. And he talked so much that no one even got a chance to ask questions. And I don't think anyone really cared because he was just so entertaining. So it's going to fade into him already in the middle of his conversation. But it's not much. It's the very beginning, I promise. And then it's just going to go the full hour of him giving you the goods. So I hope you guys enjoy. So this is Rob Liefeld, Saturday at the Toronto Comic Con 2016 panel.
And people, first thing ever, you know, they ask me, you know, what got you into comics? Well, I'm going to tell you right now, you know when you're not very bright. You know as a kid, you're like, and I like watching cartoons, and I like drawing cartoons. I am not book smart. My teachers will tell you that. I was basically trying to get into comics since junior high. And I'd always get the notes that went home and said, tell Robbie to stop drawing on his English exam, on his math thing. I'm just trying to distract you from my bad grades. Come on. Because I was not a good student. My head was always in the cloud. I was always dreaming of adventures and how I would draw them. And like I said, like I have my one son. He's ridiculously smart. My wife and I go, we don't understand how he has 4.5 in high school. Because I think together you couldn't get a 4 with my wife and I. And I'm like, wow. You know, we have fun. We're fun people. But I go, Luke, you're so damn smart. You can be like, in an industry of need, you can be a doctor or a lawyer or something people need to do. That's a good life. Having been an artist, don't be an artist. And I love it, but there's times when you have 3 kids, you're like, oh, I should probably do a little more work. I need to motivate today. I don't have patience in a waiting room with people who need to be healed. But so anyway, I was able to get into comics right out of high school. Despite my high school teacher telling me, what are you doing that for? That's not a legitimate business. And I was like, you're awesome. And my favorite thing is every year he asked me to come back and talk to his class. And I say, I can't. Because I would have to point to you and say, first rule of Mr. Class, don't listen to this guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'm being kind. He was you got to get through discouragements in life. I've had a pretty fun career. At one point, I had the Midas touch. Everything I touched turned to gold. You can ask comic book retailers. You can ask fans. And then one day, people woke up and decided I sucked. And I was like, wait, I didn't get their vote on that. I don't suck. And people go, why were you so happy through all that? I'm like, well, let's see. I had a dad who had 20 years of brain tumors. I had my art teacher tell me I shouldn't get into comics because that's not a legitimate business. I've had bigger discouragements than people on the internet saying, you suck. So that's why I just never let it get to me. It doesn't matter. And I've always been gainfully employed in comics, so I'm very excited to do comics. And that's why I'll continue to do comics until I can't see and my hand, you know, can't function. And I was able to meet the godfather of comics, Jack Kirby, in the late 80s, early 90s. How he handled the shows, I was in such awe of him. But I saw how he struggled at the end of his life to draw, but he still did it. And I'm like, that's my guy, I'm going to do that. I'm going to draw until I, like, you know, you can't tell what it is. And some of you are like, well, I still can't tell what you're drawing right now, so what's your excuse? But, so I was able to get hired out of high school by Marvel Comics at the very first WonderCon, which was growing into this big, nice show. I think they had me as a guest, none. And I'm like, come on, I got hired in the show! But, and Marvel hired me, and I got sent some short stories, and then around that time, I'm going to take you real quick through my career. I did a book for DC Comics called Hawk and Dove. And, thank you. I fought for that assignment like you have no idea because I read the outline for the series. Now, for those of you who don't know, and you can't get to Deadpool without Hawk and Dove, so you're going to have to hear about these bird characters. When I was a kid, I loved the old Teen Titans before they were the new cool Teen Titans. And they were all kind of cheesy, but I always thought Hawk and Dove was cool, except Dove was less cool than Hawk. Hawk had a lot of anger, and I was an angry kid, so I responded to the Hawk guy. Well, they were turning Dove into a girl, and I was like, wow, this sounds fantastic, and their outline was great. But it was indicative of the industry at the time. Nobody wanted Hawk and Dove because they were D-list characters. And royalties had really become a big deal in comics. I mean, look, it's nice to get paid for what you do. It's nice to get paid better for what you do. Now, Mark Silvestri knows that we give him a hard time. We rib him. Mark is probably the best artist of my generation, my peer group, easily of the Image group. And I think they'd all, if they had to vote on it, we would all say Mark is the most ridiculously talented. And at the time, he had been doing X-Men for several years. And the thing that people would say about Mark, oh, Mark Silvestri's making a lot of money. He draws the X-Men. And he always had these great parties after San Diego. And we would go to his house in Malibu. And when he was the first guy that I knew had a house on the beach in Malibu. And by the beach, I mean his backyard was the sand and the ocean was about where the back pillar was. And there was one time we were at a party, I'm like, is that water going to come in the living room, Mark? Because we're screwed. This is a bad storm. But people chased paychecks, just like they do in any job. And Mark didn't chase a paycheck. He just was talented enough to get put on the best-selling book in comics. People, royalties were kicking in, and royalties got you houses in Malibu, on the beach. So little Robbie Liefeld, I was a scrapper. I was living in an apartment, I wasn't married, I didn't have kids, and I just knew that I would draw the crap out of that Hawk and Dove comic. And the great thing is, and the editor told me, and he's a jackass, we are not friends, he told me, Mike Carlin, that's his name, he told me, well, the only reason you're getting this is because everybody else turned it down. And I'm like, I know two of my friends turned it down. They're like, I'm not drawing Hawk and Dove. And inside, I was like, just clearing the path. More no's. And so I was the guy that got to draw the revival of Hawk and Dove. Now, I think because my passion was on the page, it sold really well. I think people said, oh, what's this? Now, the Kiesels, like I said, had a great story. And my big contribution to Hawk and Dove was when they were deciding to make Hawk and Dove, Dove a girl. Like, I had sent in all these designs, and online you can see them. I did like 3-4 different character designs for Dove. And the editor said, no, none of this. You can't show her hair. She needs to look like the male Dove. You know, exactly the same. And I'm like, okay, so the male Dove's costume, he has a skull cap, like when women go swimming in the 1950s movies and they cover their hair in the skull caps. That's what the male Dove had, which is why he was lame. He looked stupid. I mean, some characters look stupid, and you know what I'm talking about. And some characters look cool, and that's why we love them immediately. Boba Fett, oh my gosh, I love you. I don't know anything about you, but I'm going to send in all my proof of purchases in 1978 to make sure that I get your action figure. I'll tell you about that later. That gets to Deadpool. Thing is, Dove looked lame. And I'm like, so we're basically going to make Dove a female, dove a male, and the difference is she has hips and a breast. I'm tired. I signed for 5.5 hours straight. I'm tired. So I'm giving it all I got. My wife said, what are we doing tonight? I said, I don't know what you're doing. Have fun in Toronto. I'll be drooling on the pillow, on the bed at 7:30. Which is 4:30 back in California, which is even more pathetic. But I said, no, I gave Dove a ponytail. I gave her all these different, and he's like, none of this. And the Kiesel said, Rob's got a point. They're kind of shy people. And this was their first time writing. So I think they were scared to speak up because it's like, we got ours. Sorry, kid. But I'm like, this is stupid. Dove, I don't even want to do this. And Dove is going to have a skull cap. The hair, ask me, Liefeld, why was it so important to give her hair? Not to distinguish her that she was a female. She's going to have breasts. You're going to know she's a female. But that the hair was going to give her motion. She's Dove. She's going to move a certain way, move differently than off. It's the kind of stuff artists think about when they draw. Well, finally, I won that showdown. Long story short, Hawk and Dove did very well. How did Hawk and Dove do very well? Issue 3, I got a call. Hello. Hi, this is Rob. Hi, Rob. This is Bob Harris. I'm from Marvel Comics, and I edit the X-Men. And we would like to know if you would like to come work in the X-Men office. Now, for dramatic purposes, I would love to drop this mic. Sorry, Sam. I was like, I'm getting invited to the X-Men office? And again, not for sales. For me, the X-Men were my favorite characters. Now, in the world that we live in now, the world my son and my daughter, my sons and daughter have grown up in the last 15 years, it has become very Avengers-centric. And good for Marvel, they did that. They made the Avengers their biggest brand. For 20 years, the X-Men was the most exciting comic book on the comic stands. It was the most addictive soap opera, and I've told Chris Claremont to his face, did I break this? Is it working? Yeah, it's working. That's all I need. Rob, here's the bill for the mic. The X-Men were the most exciting team concept, you know, in comics, and so being invited into that office at 19 years old, I was about to turn 20, I was like, oh my gosh. So I was like, heck yeah, because me and the editor on Hawk and Dove, we did not get along. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And I came over to the X-Men, and after a couple of fill-ins, they said, Rob, we want you to take over one of these two books, X-Factor or New Mutants. Now, I micromanage my career. Sometimes I do it well, sometimes I make slip-ups. I can't do it perfectly. But they wanted me to do X-Factor. And for those of you who don't know, X-Factor was a book that featured the original X-Men. And so you're immediately in Jack Kirby's shadow. You're someone in John Byrne's shadow, great artist. And a guy named Walt Simonson had just finished a run. I'm like, I don't want to follow that guy. He's a legend. I don't look like crap. Sometimes the right job is not the job that's offered to you because you're not ready for that position. So I was like, I come from America, obviously. We're having a crazy presidential run. I'm going to have a sidebar here. Like Marco Rubio, you weren't meant to be president, ever. My kids are like, why are you upset? I don't like Marco Rubio. I don't give a crap. But it was sad when he retired the other night. I'm not going to be president this year, you think? Maybe being president isn't on your resume, bud. And again, he reached a little too far. I thought X Factor was too far for me. So they said, Rob, we've got the New Mutants, but honestly, X Factor sells better. And I'm like, well, I don't care. I don't care about sales. Give me New Mutants. I know what I can do with New Mutants. Give me the New Mutants. I can fix up that house. Because they said, Rob, we're going to cancel it. We're going to cancel New Mutants because it's not selling very well. So if you want to do whatever you want with it, maybe get it going again. And I'm like, yes. And go back and look at the issues before me. The New Mutants had become a silly comic. It was a silly comic. That's my kindest way. They had a giant character that looked like Big Bird from Sesame Street called Bird Brain. And they had Warlock. And they had a lead female character in 1989 that looked like Madonna in 1983. And they had a lead male character, Richter, who looked like Billy Idol in 1982. And I'm like, I'm 19, I watch MTV every day. These guys' fashion sense is 7 years, 8 years too late. Like, let me go, I can make everyone look like Millie Vanilli. That's a joke. No, Sunspot's costume was very Millie Vanilli. I gave him like a little Michael Jackson vest. Man, I was like, I know, I'm young, I can relate to kids, but the revelation was they let me introduce this character called Cable. And that was my first big ticket to kind of stand out in the business. Because really the X-Men had been really, especially those years, had been doing Magneto and Professor X back and forth. And I felt like there was a voice in the middle that wasn't, there's the Peacemaker and the Warmonger. And so I said, Cable, I told Marvel, Cable is the guy that steps in and says, you're all wrong. You're wrong and you're wrong. This is how it's going to be, and you better get prepared now and stop being so lackadaisical. And we're not supposed to do what Magneto wants to do, which is wipe everybody out, but we have to survive, and we have to be more, you know, aggressive and hunt down our foes before they get us. And the great message that Cable has was, because if you're from the future, awesome. I always love time travel stories, if it was in Star Trek, Terminator, whatever. And again, he's able to tell everyone, I know how you died. I know how you died. And he's actively trying to make things different. Well, fans loved Cable. And that was fantastic. Cable appeared in New Mutants 87. And they let me, I think in that issue, I introduced 13 new characters. They said, Rob, just go. Again, it was awesome. It was like, Rob, just fix up the house. And I don't even think they thought like it would go so well. I certainly didn't know it would go so well. I was just trying to keep my job. If I could get sales to go up, then I could keep drawing comics. Again, it just comes down to, when you're an artist, can I draw a page tomorrow? Will they pay me to keep drawing? Or am I going to have to go jump around and draw, like, you know, one of the new universe comics before they get canceled? And if you're old like me, you know what that means. But so the thing is, Cable took off, and so 10-ish, every month our sales were going up and up and up. And I know this, royalties, statements, and you're like, oh, wow. When I got on the book, it was selling about 100,000 copies. X-Men was selling about 400,000 copies. Wolverine, X-Factor, about 350,000 copies. So we really were the low, and suddenly, ba-boom, 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 we were chugga-chugga-chugga-chugga, we were the engine that could. And suddenly we're staring down Jim Lee and Wolverine. I gotcha. I love Jim, we were buddies. But he always had Wolverine and I didn't, and that's not a fair fight. Just like Todd, I'm like, Todd, you're doing your crap with Spider-Man. Hi, I draw the worldwide icon, international, global, number one Marvel seller. Hi, I draw X-Men. I'm Jim Lee. I draw X-Men. I draw the best Wolverine ever. Hi, I'm Rob Liefeld. I draw the New Mutants. Yes, everyone, the New Mutants that you've never heard of. I got to fight you guys, because we're competitive. I couldn't let them get out ahead of me. And I would sit up at night, how do I catch Jim? How do I catch Todd? And I'm just being honest. That's how we all compete with each other. And I always said, one of them is famous for calling me up and saying, why do you keep introducing all these new characters? And I was like, I kind of bugs you then. I can tell in your voice it bugs you. It bugs you. And I'm like, I got a million of them, so who cares? And this sounds like a good deal to me. The fine print said, you will participate and receive blank percent of this character for the rest of your life. And I'm like, if I create the next Wolverine, that's a good gig. And Wolverine was everything to me. Like I've already told you, Wolverine in 1989, 1990, the best character ever. And it was the soap opera and the visceral, you know, the action in him and the rage in him. But Chris Claremont really gave him a mystery. Wolverine, since I was a kid, was a mystery. And so there's a reason why when I introduced Cable, he had to know Wolverine. And when I introduced Deadpool, which I did in the first issue, they let me write. They're like, Rob, we are going to let you write the book now. Quiet, hurrah! I was like, yeah! I get to do everything myself. It was funny. I don't think Louise and I were getting along very well. And you know, she had been on the book, and I was the cranky, no, I was the hothead new guy that was, I was like a, to describe me the best is good old Robert Kirkman. He's a really good buddy of mine. I'm not name dropping. He's actually one of my best friends. And we were really good friends before he became a gajillionaire off Walking Dead. A couple weeks ago, he brought me down. I don't know. I put it up online. He brought me down a surprise present of a 6'1" Deadpool statue that now is in the middle of our house, and my wife doesn't know what to do with it. But and our dog every day is like, I'm like, "Sorry, dude, you have to deal with it." But we were talking, and I was talking to Robert that day, and I was talking about how, like, I don't like to wait around. And he's like, "Really, you, Mister? We gotta go. I gotta go. I can't wait. I gotta go." And Todd McFarlane used to tell me, he said, "You're a fucking Bronco. If you came for a Todd imitation, here it is. You're a Bronco, a fucking Bronco. And I told Marvel they shouldn't put a saddle on you. Let the Bronco buck. Let the Bronco buck." And I was like, this guy's awesome. He gives me the best phrases ever. Before I took over New Mutants, he also said, Rob, I'm having an intervention. You're a jackrabbit. Jackrabbit? Where? You're a jackrabbit. You're jumping from book to book to book. They can't catch you. You're like a jackrabbit. Stay on one book. I'm like, that's really good advice. Like, Todd was the best coach in comics. I mean, Todd's like the Phil Jackson of coaches. But I was a Bronco, and I think Louise was like, oh, why do I have to work with this unruly teenager? And so finally she didn't. And I was able to do the book, and I was super excited. And there was two guys, I love them both, Scott Liddell and Fabian Nicieza, who had been asking, they'd call me and Jim Lee up all the time. Hey, can we ride with you guys? Hey, can we script with you guys? Hey. Because again, everyone's looking for their break. And I love Scott. Sorry Scott, I like Fabian more, sorry. And I said, okay, let's go with Fabian. Let's do Fabian. Because the thing about doing a monthly book, it's a grind. It's a grind now. Today, I think only Greg Capullo does monthly work. Most of these guys do 4 issues and they're out. And then they come back 6 issues later. I still can't believe I did that issue, that issue, that issue, that issue, that issue. Oh my gosh, I did a lot of issues. 22 pages a month in a 30-day cycle is very difficult for any artist. I was penciling and inking my own work and writing, directing all the traffic, coming up with all the ideas. I read these retreats now that Marvel and DC have, and I'm like, I would never go to a retreat. The guys that I grew up idolizing, Frank Miller, Walt Simonson, Jack Kirby, John Byrne, they just created their stuff in their studio, and they sent it in. Beta Ray Bill and Elektra and Jerry Conway, who created The Punisher, they weren't created at retreats. Those were talented guys doing talented things. And, I'm not the guy to go to the retreat. So, anyway, I took over New Mutants. Fabian was at the helm scripting with me. The reason I said I just didn't have time to put word balloons. That just slows down the process. And Fabian had snappy patter, a way with words, and I thought he'd be a great fit with me on the book. So the two of us teamed up, and we kicked some major booty. I'm not going to curse with all the kids in here. I don't normally curse, but parents, I'm a good dad. I'm not an R-rated Deadpool movie. So long story short, Deadpool lands in New Mutants 98 with Domino and Gideon. And if you've heard me do this on the internet, I'm sorry, it's a tired joke. I put all three of them on the cover, and if you were on the cover in a book that I did, that said they're important. They're supposed to be important. You're supposed to like them. Pay attention to them. And what I say is 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Deadpool and Domino are still around. Gideon, not so much. Got wiped out. Green hair, ponytail. Rob, maybe you needed to have a young kid come on and say, that's not what Millie Vanilli's wearing. But it was time for Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, and I didn't get the memo. But so Gideon and Domino, I mean, Deadpool and Domino roared to life with New Mutants 98, and the mail was crazy. Back, those of you who are not, you know, all you millennials, we used to mail letters and things. I got boxes from Marvel, one that I thought I was getting a washing machine in. I'm like, Marvel loves me! This box, if I was a kid, when I was a kid, this would be my fort. But right now, is this a washing machine? And it was all the mail from New Mutants 98, and people going, I love Deadpool, I want more Deadpool. And Marvel, Bob Harris, same guy that hired me, said, Rob, can we put Deadpool in the very next issue? I said, Bob, I sent the very next issue to you yesterday. And FedEx, at Marvel, you could not overnight, they would cancel your account. 2 days or nothing. I said, Bob, you're going to get it tomorrow, but we can't go back and put Deadpool. And he's like, Rob, we've never got mail on a character like this ever before. People just love it. Sidebar. I'm 9 years old. I see Star Wars. You'll never know what Star Wars is unless you were that age, anywhere from 5 to 15, 17, 18 in 1977. The year before there was Logan's Run. It was a sci-fi film. It looks nothing like Star Wars. When I saw Star Wars, to this day I can go back going, what am I watching? What is these special effects? Go see how they shoot the guns in Logan's Run. It hisses. And then back there, time release, like an explosion. And even as a kid, I'm like, but in the comic, it's like a laser blast. But, like, this is the worst personal effect ever. It's like they ran out of money at the 15-minute mark. And Star Wars are like, this is a gazillion dollars, this special effect. So I saw Star Wars. Star Wars is very important to me. You don't get Cable and Deadpool without Star Wars. I saw Star Wars 36 times the summer of 1977. Why, Rob? Because my parents thought Star Wars was the best babysitter ever. And Saturday and Sunday, I would say, Mom, Dad, just take me to Star Wars with my friends. we would go see the 11 o'clock show and then the 2 o'clock show, and at 5 o'clock I'd get picked up, and I had a great Saturday. And I had a great Sunday. And it just kept racking up, and we were like, did you see it 30? Yeah, I'm at 32, are you? And it's weird, because the last 6 weeks I've done appearances and some shows and people and online and on Twitter and Instagram where I talk to so many of you. Hey, Liefeld, I'm going to see Deadpool for the 18th time. I've got a guy who's told me he's seen it 66 times and has nailed me the stubs. And I'm like, dude, I'm not sure I want to know you. That's impressive, but also scary. I saw it 13 times. Now, why did I see Deadpool 13 times? I did 6 fan screenings with Fox. Well, I did a test screening. I'll get to that later. But, I mean, wow, 36. I thought, I'll never top this as a kid. But when they introduced, and the Star Wars action figures came out, and if you were a kid, you went to the store and they didn't have them, you had to buy a box that said, this will come in 12 months. What? Well, I looked at my box and I went, oh, when's my Luke Skywalker coming? When's my sand person coming? But when they finally arrived, action figures, whoa! And they're the first time, you know, the figures were this big. Because previously, when I was a kid, I literally, you know, played with dolls. G.I. Joe was a giant doll. And people who weren't, you play with dolls? People who weren't into that stuff. Nice doll, I felt, shut up. He has a kung fu grip. But suddenly Star Wars figures. Well, in the second wave of Star Wars figures, on the back of Star Wars, they showed a visual. I already alluded to it. Boba Fett. Who the hell is Boba Fett? I don't know anything about him. I just know I need him in my life now. And kids, you had to go buy. I had to mow some extra lawns that kind of 10 days. And you got 6 proof of purchases. You would buy. This is why they don't do it anymore. This would, collectors would Harry Carry. They'd kill themselves. They'd slit their throats. You'd have to buy the action figure, then cut up the packaging. No, we don't cut up the packaging because we don't take it out of the packaging. We just look at it. Like, that's Saturday Night Live skit. So true. I have all the new, what's it called? Force Awakens figures? I haven't taken a single one out. I just look at them through the plastic. They're so cool. But Boba Fett, I had to buy 6 Stormtroopers and cut those proof of purchases out, cardboard, brittle, in a mail package to Hasbro, and for 6 weeks I ran home every day. Was it coming? And then one day, I reached into my mailbox. We had mailboxes, kids. And it was like a tube of toothpaste. And I'm like, am I getting Star Wars toothpaste? And I open it. And he just looked awesome! And I was now like, every Boba Fett rules the universe. If I did curse, I'd say everyone was Boba Fett's female dog. But he was my favorite. I knew nothing about him. He looked cool and he had a cool name. And then I stayed up to watch the Christmas special that George Lucas has never aired again. But I watched it on my TV, sitting squat. I'm like, good, I can put both legs behind my leg. I still can't at 48. I'm very agile. So I'd sit in my yoga position in front of the TV. Oh, and they had a Boba Fett cartoon. He didn't do much there either, but he's cool. Sometimes we just like stuff that's cool and that looks cool. And writers don't want to tell you that because they can't draw. But artists will tell you every day. That's why. You know what? Before I knew about Elektra, I was at the 7-Eleven, and I'm like, that's a cool issue of Daredevil in 1980. Who is Elektra? All post cool on the wharf with her size out, and Daredevil going, what's this? And when Beta Ray Bill crashed in, looking like a horse with Thor's armor, smash, you're like, Beta Ray Bill! And I know that Cable and Deadpool had the same reaction, and I'll tell you, the other character, kind of like Boba Fett, that had everyone's attention, and then everyone, just like Boba Fett, it's like Star Wars is doomed to repeat itself in a cycle. Captain Phasma, we loved her. We thought she was cool. She did nothing. You did nothing. I have to wait another 3 years for you to do something? When I saw Empire Strikes Back, I'm like, Boba Fett, man, he's gonna get fights. Man, he's gonna be awesome. I need them alive. Don't cross me, Bounty Hunter. What? He got one shot off at Luke and like, what? And then I'm like, 3 years later, this is gonna be Boba Fett's moment. This is gonna be it. This is, oh crap, he just got swallowed by the vagina looking thing. That's my Boba Fett. I waited 6 years for him to do nothing. So now you know why Wolverine Origins didn't freak me out. I'm like, there'll be another day. This is my Empire Strikes Back. They tell me they're going to do a full Deadpool movie. We're going to get him right. So Deadpool, there's a reason Deadpool is a trading card in the second best-selling comic book of all time, X-Force. He's not in the book, but they made sure they had a trading card. Because people, my favorite thing people tell me, Yes, millennials. Most of them look like you. Are you happy that Deadpool's popular now? Stop. Okay. Deadpool's first issue was 780,000 copies. Kids, when I took over the New Mutants, it was 700. I'll take full credit for that 780,000. They moved the writer out. Why? Okay, Rob, your entire ship, 780. The last issue of the New Mutants, my proudest achievement. Why is it your proudest achievement, Rob? Four printings, 1 million copies. Not a scratch and sniff, not an acetate cover, not a trading card. There's nothing special about New Mutants 100. It's double-sized, it's 48 pages of kick-ass, and it introduces X-Force. And it went back to press again and again and again. So we got ready for X-Force. I need to look over at this side of the room more. We got ready for X-Force. But they're like, Rob, you gotta get Deadpool in there. And even more important, there's a reason that the second issue of it, X-Force, which sold 1.5 million copies, has Deadpool on the cover. And the first 12 pages are Deadpool, not X-Force. I always think, like, what are the X-Force fans saying? I thought I was buying an X-Force comic. And Deadpool was here to stay. He was, I put up on Instagram the other day, like, Marvel called me, probably the biggest reason I went to and started forming Image Comics with my buddies, was Marvel called me, and the head of Toy Biz, which would eventually buy and merge with Marvel, his name was Avi Arad. Now, people know him now, and he's kind of kicked around, and he made some bad decisions. See, one day you're on top, one day you're Avi Arad. And Avi, when he was doing Toy Biz, and the reason you love X-Men, the animated series, in all honesty, is because of Avi and all the cool 90s cartoons that Marvel did. Avi came from animation and toys. And he met with me. And Avi Arad talk like this. I'm doing exactly Avi Arad. I go meet with Avi. He's in L.A. And I'm sitting there, and I'm sweating because this guy looks like he can kill me. And he tells me, I was a commando in the Israeli mercenary army. Oh, shit. Am I even getting out of this meeting alive? Sorry, sorry. And he goes, you know I like you, Liefeld. I'm about to find out. I like you because you understand hardware and software. And I sat there. What the heck does that mean? I don't even know what you just said to me. Like hardware and software. But immediately my computer brain, that was kind of smart just for that one meeting, I put characters, the hardware, or the software, okay? I give them gear. He comes from toys. Playability is a big deal. I said, Avi, I think you like that I give everybody weapons. Yes. I like Cable. Here are the 20 Cable toys we are going to do. Whoa! Aqua Cable, Arctic Cable, Space Cable, Desert Cable, Stealth Cable, Jetpack Cable. I'm like, crap, we haven't even done this stuff in the comics. But he's toyetic. Cable's very toyetic. Okay, another word. I'm like, when I get out of here, I'll Google. No, I couldn't Google. There was no Google. I'm going to fax someone. What is toyetic? But, and he said, look, X-Force is being turned into a line of toys. And I'm like, wait a second, hello, you just did the first X-Men toys ever in 1990. There had never been X-Men a line of toys. Wolverine had been the Secret Wars toys, but historically, never an X-Men line. And it was Wolverine, Cyclops, Storm, Archangel, and they said, we're skipping all that history and getting straight to your stuff. And I'm like, woo, ka-ching, again, fine print, X percentage of everything. Yeah, I'm gonna get toys. And I tell you, I don't know what it was about being told my stuff was gonna be toys. I like sat there, I'm a toy maker. I laugh at how important that was to me. It was some weird like achievement, like you have achieved like perfection, you are a toy maker. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I said, guys, like Todd and Eric, they're making my son into toys. They're making my son into toys, so exciting. Yeah, who cares? I gotta draw Spider-Man quick. That's both Todd and Eric, they're both John Spider-Man. But the thing is that I was like, well, the next time, maybe I should own 100% of what they make in toys. And the truth is, I've been on X-Force New Mutants now for over 2 years. And there's a time, I think there's, you all know a TV show that went one season too long, X-Files. You all know, Dexter. You know, we all go, oh, wow, they should have said goodbye 2 seasons ago. Sometimes you can stay on too long. Some write, some runs are perfect. Eric, Frank Miller did 3 years about of Elektra and then left. And it left you wanting more. And I felt like it's time for me to go do something else. I've set up all these worlds. I've set up all these characters. I've given them all this background. it's time to go and do Image with my buddies. And we formed Image Comics, Jim Lee, Todd McFarlane, Eric Larson, Jim Valentino, Will Spatascio, Mark Silvestri, and me. I think I got all of them. I'm trying to get all of them. And we had a blast. Again, we didn't think we were going to set the world on fire. We just wanted to do our own thing. And doing our own thing was the right thing at the right time. And we created all these crazy comics and characters. And I tell people, that was like, I like to watch documentaries about musicians, because we were more like musicians, because we're out on tour and we're, you know, selling albums, and then eventually you all turn to each other and go, I hate you. I hate you too. You don't play guitar very well anymore. You don't sing good. You suck on the drums. Bands turn on each other. My kids were into 80s music. And they're like, Dad, what else did Styx do? Nothing. The lead singer got kicked out. What did Journey do? Nothing. The lead singer got kicked out. What did Chicago do? Same story. I'm like, all these lead singers eventually got into big fights and they left. And eventually, we all kind of were at cross purposes with each other, and it was fun. I loved it. My wife would say, why are you smiling so much? It's so fun fighting everyone. I was doing an interview. I'm not that guy anymore, but I know I was that guy. I did like a bunch of, I'll tell you right now. When you see actors do press, I agreed to be part of the press for Deadpool, and I think I did 25 interviews, and that pales. I think Ryan Reynolds did 125 interviews. Because he went to France, and he went to Germany, and he just kept going. And on the 24th interview, I think I was talking in some new made-up language. Because I was tired. They literally asked you the same thing. I'm going to try and answer this new. No, I'm not. I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm crazy. But I have massive respect for those people. When they go on their, I mean, literally seeing it up close with Ryan and the cast of Deadpool and how much they promoted that movie. Now I go, oh my gosh, it is an honor to promote your product and that the media wants to talk to you. But it's a lot of work. And so, you know, when we were breaking up Image and kind of getting tired of each other and the press was picking favorites, I just didn't care very much. And I kind of was up for a fight for about 10 years. I liked fighting. And I told this guy who was interviewing me when I was doing Deadpool, I said, when I was young, I wanted to pick every fight because I loved fighting. Now I don't want to fight anymore. I'm tired. I got 3 kids. I'd rather them every day. My wife and I land yesterday in Toronto to a text. So-and-so wants to wear my gloves to practice, but they're my gloves and I want to wear them. But you don't have practice tonight. So what? They're my gloves. Oh my gosh. So, you know, teenagers, you're always putting out fires. So I do enough of that at home. So anyway, long story short, we land on Wolverine Origins. What? I remember when they were like, Rob, Deadpool's going to be in. I'm like, awesome, kids, we're going to go see. I already knew he was going to be in a costume. I knew what was coming. But I thought, well, maybe if I see the whole movie together, that'll be cool. And we sat there, my 3 kids, my wife, and we watched Ryan cut that bullet. And the bullet went 2 ways, and oh, this is awesome. And he's funny, and he's a smart mouth. And, you know, I'm like, this is Deadpool. Oh my gosh, this is Deadpool. I always knew Ryan was Deadpool. Someone's trying to reach me. But the thing is, it's probably one of my kids, honestly. He's got my socks. These are my expensive basketball socks. So anyway, when they got to the end of Deadpool, I was like, oh, it's happening. This is where it gets really all bad. And the good thing that came out of Origins was they knew that they blew it. One of the producers, if you notice, a lot of the producers on the X-Men films have changed over. That has nothing to do with me. That's just fact. And one of the producers I was talking to, I'm like, well, you have Deadpool in the movie. This is about 3 months before the movie came out. I said, I'm so excited you have Deadpool. And they're like, yeah, but he's not a big deal. Okay. No, the big deal. The big deal is Gambit. We have Gambit. And I'm like, nerd alert, you need to go on the internet. No one cares. People want Deadpool. Gambit's cool, not cool as Deadpool, never has been, no, sorry. And then I'm like, really? And then I was like, oh, poor Taylor Kitsch. They kind of screwed you too. So you sit there and you go, you know, at least Ryan got to reprise Deadpool because he was so right. I tell people, the reason we were so disappointed at the end of Wolverine Origins is because we loved him so much in the first 50 minutes. That's Deadpool! That's not Deadpool. But that's Deadpool! You know, now Taylor is not coming back to be Gambit, so good luck chaining with that. He's a nice guy. Hope it works out. But so they immediately called me and said, Rob, we know we got it wrong. come meet with us, let's talk story, let's talk what we should do. And look, a lot of these Fox people, especially back then, they weren't aware, they'd like, you know, some stuff was really straightforward. Rob, what do you think? I told him what I thought. I'm not going to go into it, but, you know, I really felt like, you're going to have Ryan Reynolds? You got to have a girlfriend. You got to have a romantic. You got to have a love interest. Well, who should that be? Should we have Siren? No. Too difficult to explain. Vanessa. Do Vanessa. That relationship is simple to explain. Because, again, I'm thinking, I want audiences that walk in to fall in love with this character and not have to do, you know, algebra, you know, when they just need to do simple math and go, these two are a character. Wait, Banshee's daughter? She has Sonic? Wrong? No. So a lot of it was just, don't do that, don't do this, do that. No, you can't use him, you don't own him. No, you can't own, no, put those cable deadpools away. You don't own the Serpent Squad. You know, so you get to go in there and kind of be the comic book guy and point him on the right direction. Now, about a month later, Zombieland came out. And Zombieland is one of the few zombie movies my wife went and saw with me that she loved. And I'm going to tell you why she loved it. I mean, it was extremely well made, but the script was fantastic. And when they announced that the Zombieland guys were going to be doing Daredevil, I was like, oh my gosh, we're getting it right, like right away. I mean, again, Wolverine Origins was May of 2009. They hired these guys late 2009. And they had a script done in 2010. I read it, and I was like, this is the greatest movie script I've ever read. And it had nothing to do with Deadpool. On the page, the way it changes from past to present. Now, I'm going to tell you, page one of Deadpool, 2010, says, written by Rhett Reese, Paul Wernick. Turn the page. Page one, scene one, Juice Newton, Angel of the Morning. That's right there. Freeze frame. Go around the car. Deadpool is holding everybody. Zoom in. They even called it, like, freeze frame bullet time image. I mean, all that was on the page since 2010. And I'd say the first two acts are largely unchanged from what you saw in the theaters. And, hey, can I get a show of hands? How many of you actually went and saw Deadpool? And, oh, you're awesome! 20th Century Fox, thank you! Thank you! How many of you saw it more than once? Whoa! Thank you! And then I'll stop there. Because I don't know if the guy with the 66 times is waiting to knife me on the way out. I don't know if he's in Canada. I didn't look. Because a lot of times I go and see where everyone lives and they're like, no information. Oh, okay. So, anyway, that script was so fantastic. And then they hired Tim Miller. You guys don't know, Tim Miller was on that assignment for 5 years. And here's the miracle of Deadpool, that they didn't hire other writers, especially given the management changeup at Fox. They kept a lot. You read all the time. You see some of these movies have 10 writers, 5 writers, 4 writers. This script won every battle because people would go, whoa. A couple of buddies of mine work for Marvel Disney. And if you didn't know this, they're competitive with Marvel Fox. Newsflash. We were at the dinner and they go, hey, Liefeld, I want to tell you something. I read that Deadpool script. That script is good. I don't know why they're not making that script. And I'm like, I don't either! I'm like, don't talk to me on the Deadpool movie. I'm going to snap. I'm going to be the guy that stabs you 66 times. There was a period where, especially after Tim invited me up to see the previz, to see what they were going to do in the proof of concept. Proof of concept is when they hired Tim to make that 2.5-minute short film where he drops in the truck and beats everybody up. And I was there for the making of that. I saw it come together. I saw Tim render it, bring the CGI. He invited me up. Tim Miller at Blur Studios has a killer screening room. If you put both these screens together, kind of what he has in his screening room. And I go, hey, Tim, can I come home and watch it again, please? I just want to see it again. Sure, Rob, come on up. Tim Miller, coolest guy ever. Comic book fan through and through. You can sit down. He'll talk to you about random comics, not the stuff everyone seems to know. You know, you notice how now you throw a rock in any direction and everyone knows everything about Deadpool? Like, no, you don't. But, I know. No, you don't. You don't know anything about Deadpool that didn't happen 3 weeks ago. But you say you did because it's cool now. And it's kind of sad. I like that Deadpool's cool, but I kind of liked him when he wasn't super mega 750 million popular. No, I don't see 750 million. The thing my kids get asked all the time, is your dad going to make $700 million? We would live on the moon. We would not be here. We would have a spacecraft that would take us places. But that the Deadpool phenomenon and how it's come about is just such a testament to the guys who made the film. Tim Miller, ridiculously talented, finally got his chance to shine. Ryan Reynolds, who never gave up, never surrendered, always stayed in the fight. And Rhett and Paul, who gave birth to that amazing screenplay. I remember when I got to like page 20 and Colossus shows up on the freeway. Listen to me, Deadpool. Awesome! Says heavy Russian accent. The way Colossus hasn't been. I mean, I just was like, and I called Rhett and Paul and I go, I love that that Colossus is the straight man. I would always say, I tell my friends, Colossus is like in Rush Hour, you know, Jackie Chan, he's kind of the straight man, and Chris Rock, well, not Chris Rock, Chris Tucker. Chris Tucker is kind of Deadpool, and Jackie Chan is Colossus. They play off each other great. I remember it's great because there's a guy who I did an interview with, and I was sitting there talking to him. This is for the promotion, and I'm like, I am not going to mention the fact that I know you went on the internet after I was at a convention and someone was videoing me like people are videoing me now, and I said that Colossus is in a lot of the movie. I told people, Colossus is in a lot of the movie. You're going to love this version of Colossus. Cut to Monday after the show, Rob Liefeld doesn't know what he's talking about. Colossus has barely a cameo in Deadpool. Somebody doesn't know what they're talking about, and it's not me. But awesome, I just got called out for not knowing anything. Were you on the set? No, I was on the set. Oh, but you know, okay, because the internet's awesome. It never lies. So literally 1 week ago, okay, so I have never been to Canada except for last year and then now. So thank you. You're all wonderful people. My wife and I fell in love with Vancouver. Sorry. I don't know. Every city's competitive. In LA, it's like, Orange County hates Los Angeles. Los Angeles hates Orange County. We both hate Sacramento. That's how it works. And the thing with when we were there, it was a year ago that this weekend, we went to Vancouver. We were there for a week while they filmed Deadpool. That's when I filmed my little brief scene in the bar. Let's clear something up right now. The guy who is with me in the bar, he is referred to three times after he is introduced as Buck. Buck. His name is Buck. Ryan comes in and says, Buck. Liefeld. He does not say this internet rumor. F. Liefeld. No. Do people watch the movie? Because then they say, send these drinks to Buck and to Booth. And then, knock it off, Buck. And then she says, hey, fat Gandalf. But that guy, I mean, he was giant and ridiculously powerful. My original scene, maybe they'll release it someday, is, and I signed off on it because I thought it was funny, especially John Byrne, who I grew up loving and still love. John, I'm going to torment you and give you tears by telling you I still love you. Because in the 90s, when myself and Todd, we got more popular. Now, it just happens. It's like I have been a Kobe Bryant fan for 20 years. I have fought with everyone. It got the thing that exhausted me for 3 years, if you mentioned Kobe in a negative light in my hometown, I would fight you. I would fight you verbally. We would go at it. And I think people were like, don't mention it. Oh, he's a rapist. He's a whatever. He's the greatest player ever! Is what I'd say after Jordan. It's after Jordan. He's number two. But, I'm a Shaq guy. It's all about Shaq. You know, you get competitive in sports, but now my kids, Kobe to them is a grandpa. It's Kevin Durant, it's Russell Westbrook, it's Steph Curry. It's cool having kids because they introduce you to the different flow. Well, we were the new Steph Currys and the Russell Westbrooks and the Kevin Durants in basketball. And old John Byrne didn't like it. And he made an awesome quote. I wish I could drive a knife or stakes through Rob Liefeld's hands. And he would never draw again. And I'm like, but I like you! And, that's hurting me, John! But John's a mean guy. The internet knows. He's a mean guy. But I still love him. But boy, he kicked me around. So they said, Rob, what if we had this guy? That we were riffing on some ideas. Originally, they offered me to be in the strip club. My son saw that email and said, you're not going to be in the strip club, Dad. Okay, I guess I'm not in the strip club. Dear Tim, I won't be appearing with Stan in the strip club. And it said, I won't say what it said. It just, Rob, do you want a blankety blank in the strip club or with Stan, or do you want to be in the bar? And I'm like, yes, I'm in the bar. So then they said, well, what should we do? And they had a knife, and they were going to stab me through the hand. And then I filmed this scene. I filmed this scene like 15 times. And I say some crazy stuff. It's funny. Ah! they walked me away to treat me for the knife through my hand. But his name's Randall. He's the sweetest guy. Who you know is Fat Gandalf, who Vanessa grabs his Hunwakatas. He is the sweetest giant of a man ever. He is a giant, Brutus beast of strength, but he is the sweetest, kindest guy. And they only had one prop knife, and the prop knife was rubber. But he was sweating profusely because it was 1,000 degrees on the set that day in the bar, hot lights, and literally, there was a point where, like, on the fourth take, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to act like I don't see this, and maybe they don't see it, but they saw it. The knife was bending, like, every time he stabbed, I'm like, okay, I am, and then to find the team goes, because Randall, God bless him, was raining all over with his sweat. That rubber knife was like in a washing machine after the fourth take, and it got soft and goopy, and it was no longer pliable. Boing! It was like a pogo stick. And literally, it would bend and bend, because he was stabbing me. So they said, okay, cut, let's improvise right now. And it was Ryan said, Rob, would you mind if I called you out? And just said, Lyko, it's kind of meta. It's kind of in keeping with character, I'll recognize you. And walk by, and I'm like, yeah, that's great. And literally, that is because the knife became goopy and pliable when a knife should be soft, kids. Don't stab anybody. He said, okay, here's how it's going to go. They improvise it right there. I'm going to come in, Buck, Liefeld, and we're going to move on. And Randall put up some pictures the other day of him with the knife, because the studio photographer is there the whole time taking pictures. And so it was fun. That was a blast to be there. But like I said, and the freeway scene, if you've been to Vancouver, everywhere, when we landed, signs, the freeway will be shut down for 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And they asked me, production came to me the last day I was there, said, Rob, we are asking so many favors of all these good people in Toronto. Would it be cool? Do you have like a print or something we can give to people? And I said, I'll go to Kinko's right now. I had my iPad. I had files. I went to Kinko's. We printed out about 40. Because he said he needed about 20. I said, look, I'll double you. I'll give you 40. 11 by 17 Deadpool prints. I signed them all. I said, give these out to people. And he was like, dude. Because I'm telling you, the vibes on that film were fantastic. Everybody knew that they were having a blast. And Tim and Ryan and everybody was just kicking so much butt, and the movie was coming out great. So it was like, let's thank these good people, because that freeway was shut down for a long time. If they shut it down in my house, I'd freak out. I'd hate everything too. But the reason it is, hey, Colossus is on the freeway. I might have seen a big guy in a rubber suit playing Colossus, the green suit. But again, to have the internet guy go, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Awesome. I love the internet. So the movie came out. And the last thing I'll tell you about the movie was when I was on set, they're like, shut up, Liefeld. Shut up. You're jinxing us. I would one time, because I get excited. I do. And I said, in between breaks, I'm like, I'm going to tell you right now, this movie is opening to $70 million. And Rhett Reese, bless his heart, stop. I don't want to hear that. Because nobody wants to be jinxed. And I was the bold jinx. And I said, no, I'm going to do the math for you. Kingsman. Nobody ever heard of a Kingsman. It's a killer movie. It's from Fox. It's R-rated. It's coming out Valentine's Day. It's based on a comic book. Those are our comps. We know we're coming out on Valentine's Day. We're R-rated. We're Fox. We're a comic book. We're Valentine's Day. I mean, come on. And I said, Kingsman opened to $46 million. We can do 70. Nobody knows what a Kingsman is. Because in the marketing, nobody knew what a Kingsman was. Like, oh man, Kingsman, my favorite comic, said no one at the time. Good comic, but nobody knew of it. That's like, again, Deadpool, popular for a long time. When people go, hey man, he was super popular back in 1998. He sold 25,000 copies. Go sit down. Here's the charts. Be quiet. They were neglecting him. Don't get me started on when they took his costume off. And they called him Agent X. And I literally wrote down, 6 months. That's how long this is going to last. And thank you, fans, for telling Marvel, this sucks! Deadpool is not Agent X. He's Deadpool. He wears red and he wears black and he shoots people. And he's funny. He's not this, I'm Agent X. Which was clearly somebody walked out of Matrix and said, hey man, leather dusters are cool. Why don't we have Deadpool have a leather duster? And he'll do like splits in the air like Neo?
no, let's keep Neo with the Matrix. And so that ended terribly, which was great. And Deadpool came back, which was great. And he was with his best buddy Cable, which is great. But the thing about the movie, so I was the Jinx, and then I would, so Kingsman was my one comp, but then I would say, and here's my second comp, and you're not gonna wanna hear this, and if you could hear eyes roll to the back of their head. That's how I would describe it. I think they were like, when does Liefeld get on a plane and go home? I have 10 minutes. Crap. I thought I was gonna have questions. Okay, this is it. I said 10, not 10-2. 10-2 ruined everything. This is last March, there was no 10-2. But Jed 1, I took my wife to, and it was raunchy, and it was funny, and it was a foul-mouthed teddy bear. And it was R-rated, and I'm like, we're in that Ted weird world, because people aren't gonna expect you to talk like this. People go, what do you kids think? I go, you mean my kid? My kid saw the movie. My other two ain't never seen Deadpool. But my kid, it's hard to deny a 16-year-old. He wasn't going, and then he worked on us and wore us down as a teenager can, and we let him. And he loved it. He went and saw it 4 times. And one time, he told me that they all bought tickets to see Zoolander 2, and you did not want to be in my house that day. And he told me that. We are not giving Deadpool's money to Ben Stiller. Okay? That's not how this works. Thank you. So, the reason I'm telling you this is, so even before, Simon Kinberg is the coolest dude. He has remade the X-Men films. That's why they're so good again. He stepped in with First Class, which is arguably one of the best movies. It just doesn't have Wolverine in it. But it's set in this, and I remember my Marvel Disney friends, I referred to them. They were like, ha! That movie's gonna flop! The X-Men in the 60s? Who's the genius that thought of that? And I'm like, it's gonna be a great movie. And it was a great movie. But X-Men in the 60s is hard. It's hard. It is hard. But Simon Kinberg came in, transformed the X-Men movies. That's why they're so good. He is why X-Men Deadpool went forward. He has a lot of credibility with Fox. He said, why aren't we making this again? I'll bet my, you know, all of my credibility on this going through. Because Tim Miller said, Rob, we got to thank Simon. He did this for us. And so when you see Simon Kinberg, which maybe you never will, say thank you. Or on Twitter, say thank you. He's on Twitter. And the thing is, before the movie opened, I didn't want to say it out loud. And one of my buddies said, Deadpool's making $100 million, just relax, opening weekend. And I'm like, now I was right, Reese. Don't say that! Oh, you're jinxing it! And I will tell you, there was a rival studio that put out at one point that Zoolander 2 was going to make more money the opening weekend. And I'm like, if that happens, I will kill myself. Derek Zoolander. So, but there was anxiety, especially as you get up to the movie opening. I'm like, make it break it, what's he gonna do? Let me tell you, little did I know that my comps, all my mathematical, Kingsman 10, should be thrown in the trash too. You guys showed up in droves and saw it again and again, and apparently Derek Zoolander has a lot of our money too, and again, so that's not in the final tally, Luke Liefeld, but when that opened to $135 million, that is because the fans said, we love this. I was in a convention that weekend. I was booked at the Phoenix Comic Con, and I had people coming up to me. It's my favorite Marvel movie ever. I'm like, I know you. You told me you hate Fox. No, this is the best movie ever. It's better than Winter Soldier. And that was all day. And again, I was just happy for my buddies who made the movie. It's their triumph. And the best part, and I gotta wrap this up. Man, I thought I was gonna take questions. I have a big moment. thank you, Toronto. So here's the last thing. They go, the first test screening, I can talk about it now. The first test screening I was allowed to go to was the last test screening. And it got the highest scores Fox has had in like 10 years. I won't tell you the number, that's not public, but it was through the roof. But I didn't see the laughter, I never knew about the after credit scene. And they didn't show the after credit scene where he talks about Cable. And if you haven't seen the movie, sorry, sucks being you. It's been 6 weeks, people. At the after, when he says, we've got Cable. All I'll tell you is last spring, they called me up and said, Rob, we got to start talking about Cable. Cable's coming. And I was back in Deadpool school. What should we do? What about this? What about this? And I just try and be the comic book guy. And people go, are you nervous about what they're going to do with Cable? And I'm like, nervous? Didn't you just see Deadpool? Why are we nervous? They're gonna give him a little more money this time, please. And, I mean, because we earned it, right? Everybody earned it. Tim earned it. And the funny thing was last summer, oh man, and Batman Superman fans are crazy. They get mad at me. I'm totally looking forward to Batman Superman. I think it's going to be awesome. There's no way it'll be as profitable as Deadpool, and that doesn't matter. It's either a good movie or not. But one of these movies, the reason I'm bringing this up, I go into San Diego, I meet all the Fox marketing people. Great to meet you, great to meet you, great to meet you. I'm so excited. I say, congratulations. Because last year when you came to San Diego, you get off the freeway always in San Diego, and you kind of go over a hill and down a hill, and there's all the signage. You know you're at Comic-Con because every studio is bought there. And the only two things that paper the town, every side of the street, busted, you either saw Superman, Batman, or you saw Deadpool. And I knew that Deadpool had a budget of $58 million. And I knew that Batman Superman had 200 million plus playlist. So, what you would say to people who, and the viral marketing had been so good up to that point, I said, congratulations, all of you guys. You have this little $58 million movie has got 200, is staring at $200 million movie straight in the eye, and that's because of you guys. Congratulations to her. And the head of Fox, she's an awesome lady, the head of Fox production, said, oh, very nice to meet you, Rob. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for those nice comments. Thank you so, so, so much. And never, ever discuss the budget ever again. One time. I was like, look at the British. She, thank you, thank you. Okay, right. And so all the way up until the day, and then I'm like, oh, they're printing the budget. And I knew it was going to happen. When it got, we did this on a bit. Then you turned around. Now all we're going to do is tell you, this is $58 million. Do you know the money we're making? No, that's not the point. The point is, the movie hit something. It connected, and it's great, and I trust all those guys. Rhett and Paul are writing the script. They're doing Deadpool 2. We should be worried if it wasn't Rhett and Paul. And they have got a great voice, and so Deadpool 2 will be fantastic. I'm sorry, the panel is over. Thank you, Toronto, for having me. That's all my last tip. If you can make something more sure, come tomorrow. It'll be screaming. I will be here tomorrow signing whatever you got. Thanks again.
There you go, guys. One full hour, like I promised, of Rob Liefeld coming to you from the 2016 Toronto Comic Con. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It was funny. He was honest, entertaining. Definitely Deadpool's daddy, right? I didn't know much about the guy other than a lot of the negative things that people said about him, so it was really cool to sit in on that and to be informed and get to know him a little bit. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Visit us at caveofsolitude.com, leave us a review on iTunes, or email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Thanks again, guys, for listening, and we will be back soon.